A scarlet costume ejects from his ring. And in a blur of motion, police scientist Barry Allen becomes The Flash, world's fastest human. The Flash, whose speed enables him to vibrate through solid walls and conquer the barriers of time and space in the pursuit of evildoers. The Flash, Scarlet Speedster for Justice.
Part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Let me get out my notes here.
You took notes?
I took notes only on the 1990s one.
That's so great.
Only because I had to just start scribbling stuff down.
That's awesome.
Oh, God, that's what awesome. A treat. What a treat.
All right. Well, this is another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. I am here with Ian Scheller and Paul Edwards, and we are here to talk about The Flash, but not just one Flash, two Flashes, because it's one Flash is not enough.
Oh my God, it's like Crisis on Infinite
Earth. It's totally Crisis on Infinite Earth. I guess we decided that it would be fun to sort of watch the 1990s pilot, or the 1990, because it only lasted one season.
Yes.
And compare it to the current show, which has only aired two episodes as of this recording right now. So I guess, what do you guys think of the new show, I guess? Let's just get that out of the way, or get started with that, because I don't know. Yeah. I like it a lot, and it's really weird that I like it as much as I do. I don't know why. What do you guys think?
Huh?
Oh, I like it a lot too, because I mean, it's a lot of fun, you know.
Yeah.
It's definitely a superhero series that, you know, embraces the sort of fun aspect. And you know, yeah, there's definitely some stakes going on, you know, and he's, you know, there's a lot of drama too, but you know, at the same time there's just a lot of fun going on with the Flash. So, I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, what do you think, Ian?
Yeah, it's great. I like that it doesn't get hung up on itself. Like, if something might be a little weird, or it might be, you know, maybe not quite fit. Like, if I think we'll find some of those things if we boil down the minutia. But
oh,
I like how it doesn't apologize for itself. It's just like, hey, this is fun. It's cool, and I really really like it. And it was super fun to go back and watch the 1990s one as well.
Yeah.
And, but I do. I'm enjoying it. I think it's great. And I got it on the DVR, so I'll be watching.
Yeah, it's really funny, because I feel like when I watched the pilot for The Flash, I felt like somebody at DC had started sitting down and watching the, like, Marvel features and started really taking notes and started finally being like, okay, what is it about the current crop of Marvel movies that people are really enjoying? And right. I feel like they really kind of hit those notes on the head with The Flash. I mean, I just really love, first of all, I really like the lead guy. You know what I mean?
Grant Gustin, right?
Yeah. I think that he's really enthusiastic, and it's kind of infectious. You know, I really like, the thing that really bums me out about, like, especially the modern day, like, DC superhero stuff is just, like, how much of a downer everything is. You know what I mean? And honestly, I feel like if you had the powers of Superman, or you had the powers of the Flash, like, you would be like, this is awesome. You know what I mean? Like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I feel that they have really brought that into the show, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, he's really, you know, embracing the power, and you know, and again, it's and he goes back to, you know, one of our favorites. I know you love this, Christian. He's just a guy who's doing things because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, if things are going wrong, he's just, you know, he just says, I'm not going to sit back and do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is something that I love about the superhero mythology, and something that has kind of been like, I think in our like modern selfish society, has really been leached out of a lot of like superhero origins. You know what I mean? And part of the reason why I really love like the first Captain America movie, because it was the first time in, since probably the Christopher Reeve Superman, where a guy actually made a speech about like, no, I want to like go fight in World War II because, you know, I want to do the right thing for the country. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just those are the things that I always loved that to me sort of set the superhero genre, like, or comic books apart from everything else, that there was this sort of like optimism that like one person, you know, they had powers, could make a difference. And it's really something that I really enjoy about this new Flash series, is that speech in the second episode, you know, where he's just totally like, you know, kind of like shouting down his foster father, you know, played by Jesse L. Martin, who I think is doing an amazing job. That second episode, he was fantastic in.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely got sort of the emotional heavy lifting going on.
Yeah.
You know, and what's great is that, like, it's like there's an element of, you know, there is an element of camp to it and an element of, like, sort of larger than life to it. But I think that all of them do a really good job of grounding it and keeping it, you know, realistic with the characters. So, and I mean, that's exactly what a comic book show needs.
Yeah, yeah.
So acting is really consistent, too. Like,
yeah.
I didn't think, and again, the whole show feels consistent. It feels like it just comes from one place, and the pacing is right there. And and Flash has always been that jovial guy, I think, at least in my mind. I've always kind of enjoyed him because he's just like, okay, he runs, he could, you know, do all these things really fast, and he's wearing a bright costume.
Yeah.
And it's even a juxtapose that next to the 1990s one where he was always being kind of put down because he wasn't a real cop. But when he got his powers, he was like, hey, I could really make a difference now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was still that same kind of theme. It's definitely a welcome addition to the roster of shows, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and what I like about it, too, is that it's definitely got its own feel than Arrow does.
Yeah.
Right.
But at the same time, they're still somewhat complementary shows. You know what I mean? Like, characters from one will go to the other show, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel wrong, you know, the way that, I don't know, you would have somebody from, I don't know, like, have there ever really been other superhero shows that were on at the same time that,
right,
you know, that shared a universe? I mean, that, I think that's probably a first, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you're right. I mean, Smallville didn't have a spinoff, did it?
No.
I don't recall. Yeah, but what's interesting to me is, like, because I remember when Arrow premiered, and I feel like that the Flash somewhat, not completely, has really avoided that Smallville trap, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Which is the first thing that you're going to compare it to, because, like, when Arrow premiered, I remembered recording the pilot and or having seen the trailers and being like, you know, that looks a lot like Smallville, and it was on the CW and it seemed cheesy. And I remember watching the pilot and being like, okay, that was okay, but it's got too much of that soapy soap opera stuff in there for me to like fully invest in it. And it took me a while to really, like, I don't think I watched the first half of Arrow like as it aired. I think I just spanked them and then kept watching them because Paul said, no, you got to keep watching. You got to keep watching. And Arrow took like 11 episodes for me to, like, I think specifically like episode 11 or 12, where I was like, okay, I can deal with this. There was a lot of like soap opera nonsense that was mixed in there. But Flash, like, for some reason, I mean, look, it's not like, you know, Sons of Anarchy or anything, like, you know, but it avoided all that, or a lot of that soap opera stuff, or getting drowned in it right off the bat, right?
Yeah, well, I think part of the thing with Arrow is that it took it took basically a season for him to sort of turn into the Oliver Queen that we recognize. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And with this one, you know, like right from the get go, you know, we buy in, you know. I thought that was interesting too. You know, I mean, both the 1990 version and the modern one have, you know, they use Barry Allen as as the takeoff, but there are elements of Wally West in both of them too. And Wally West was definitely, you know, by far the more upbeat, positive, you know, happy-go-lucky hero.
Yeah, Kid Flash. Yeah, the guy who was originally Kid Flash. I mean, that's the thing. I think I think Wally West is probably the one that most of our generation or our generation of comic nerds probably know the best, right? Because he was the Flash for so long. I mean, mm-hmm. he became the Flash like right after the Crisis of Infinite Earths, and he was sort of at that time where DC was like revamping their whole universe and sort of trying to do new things with them. Like Wally West is definitely the guy who was the first Flash that had to eat like a lot to be able to keep up his, you know,
to keep up his,
his metabolism going. And so there was a lot of they in the 1990s version, they sort of mixed like the name of, you know, Barry Allen, but like you said, melded in traits of Wally West in there. Mm-hmm. So they took the best of both worlds, I think.
Right. You know? And I think that's a great, you know, route to go if you're adapting, you know, a superhero comic for the screen.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is like what I really love about, I love the outfit. Like I just love that the way the costume really ended up looking. I love that they cast a guy who's not like big and beefy, who looks like a runner. You know what I mean? And I just think that what they've done is like, I just really can't believe how much I ended up liking it, because I was expecting to be like, okay, this is okay, I'll watch this. But like, I mean, it really, to my mind, it's more enjoyable to me than like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the nice things, again, is that, and what separates it from Smallville and a lot of the other things, is that they were kind of ashamed of, you know, the costumes and ashamed of like the superheroics of it. And this is a show that just totally embraces it. I mean, from the get-go, you know, like he introduces like, hey, I'm the fastest man alive, you know, boom, you're in the show.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see. Speaking of costume, how would you compare the new costume with the old costume, with the 1990s costume?
I don't mean to laugh, but that thing looked like he went to like a Persian rug store and it looked heavy. Like there was a close up at one point when he sneaks into the bad guy's hideout and it's a close up of his hand, and it looked like he was wearing like oven mitts with fingers. but I actually liked it for some reason.
Me too.
I actually really liked the costume they used. I mean, that guy was, I think he was already in good shape, but it seemed like the costume defined it even more.
Yeah.
Well, you know, John Wesley Shipp, you know, was a soap actor before he did the Flash.
Okay.
He was on The Guiding Light.
I did not know that.
You know, like this was the era, you know, this was just after, you know, Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah.
The whole thing was to sculpt, you know, this basically sculpt the muscles with the suit.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
But he didn't need it. He was in
good
shape.
No, he didn't need it. He was already in good shape. Stan Winston Studios designed the Flash, the 1990s Flash costume.
I know that costume cost a shitload of money.
Yeah,
that seemed to have been sort of all the way around. The special effects on that show. I was reading that they spent about $1.2 million per episode, circa 1990, which is huge.
Wikipedia says $1.6 million per episode.
Oh, my goodness.
That's crazy.
That is a hugely expensive show for 1990.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I started doing like the research and looking into the thing, you know, like so many of the comments are just like, wow, why did this get canceled? You know, why did it get canceled?
It was up against the Cosby Show.
Consensus seems to be that it not only was it up against the Cosby Show, but also it got Simpsons. Moved around a lot due to the first Gulf War.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. It got yanked out of its, time schedule for war updates and things like that. And so it just never really had a chance to, you know, develop an audience.
That's too bad. I mean, I remember when it premiered, because obviously I watched it when it came on, like I was excited about it. Mm-hmm. Just because that was during an era and obviously an age for me where it's like anything comic book related, like I would go see like just anything. It did not matter. You know, and I remember that the big news was like it was going to go up against the Cosby Show and it was going to go up against the Simpsons in the same, and they were all like in the same time slot, and it was going to be like, and everyone was saying like how much of a challenge it was going to be to go up against those. And according to Wikipedia, at one point they moved it to 8:30 to move it away from the Cosby Show and the Simpsons.
Yeah.
And that just did not help it at all either.
That's interesting. Because I remember starting watching it, and I watched it with my dad. We were both like excited, and we stayed with it as long as we could. But then I just remembered one day we weren't watching it.
Yeah.
And then I think the last episode I remember watching was the Trickster episode with Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
And then
I don't think I've even seen that one.
Oh, that's wild. You know,
I agree.
It got really confusing as to when it was going to be on, and that's crazy.
If you get a chance, I mean, you actually got the set, right?
Yeah, I got the set. I was at Best Buy, returning something, and there it was for $10, the full set of the 1990 show. And
how
I was
many
like,
episodes is in that?
It's like 22 or something. 22 really? Like that.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, and it's like, I'm done. I don't even know if all 22 aired. I'm not sure, but I was like done because I know, again, like my research is based on looking at the Wikipedia page. It got moved to like Saturday it got moved to Saturday. And during the summer, they tried to move it to Friday night to avoid cancellation, and it just didn't work. It just ended up getting canceled because it was just way too expensive a cost to like justify, you know. But that's the thing, is if you look at that 1990 pilot, you can see the money. I mean, for a show of that time, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's got a really interesting look. You know, they definitely were hugely influenced by the Tim Burton movie.
Oh yeah, no.
You know, it's very, you know, theatrical looking. It's got elements from like all kinds of you know, different eras. You know, the cars are from the 50s, and
yeah,
you know, it's funny
that,
because it really, I think, in a lot of ways, sort of precurses the Batman animated series.
Yep.
Obviously not just having the same composer for the music.
Yeah, Shirley Walker.
Yeah, Shirley Walker did the music, and of course, Danny Elfman did the
theme.
And, you know, but I mean, in a lot of ways, it really does sort of like, it is sort of the forerunner of the Batman animated series.
Well, it's really funny because when I was watching, I watched the first episode. Yeah, the Batman, the animated series debuted in 1992. Mm-hmm. And I watched the beginning of the second episode and I got interrupted. And I was blown away because when I was watching the second episode, I really felt like I was watching like this weird live action version of like Batman the Animated Series episode. The music and like the 50s cars and the like this nebulous sort of like, you know, time period that all exists in. Like I was like, wow. And one of the biggest thoughts I had watching the pilot, I was wondering if they were ever thinking of getting ambitious enough to sort of like meld their Flash, like if it had been like a huge success, mm-hmm. with the Tim Burton movies. Like if there was ever a thought of like, well, maybe there'll be a guest star here, or maybe he'll show up, like maybe making that a shared universe, because it's so obviously, you know, part of, I mean, it's so obviously inspired by the Burton movies, mm-hmm. but it seems to so like really coexist in the same world, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, the creative staff too took a lot of like a lot of comic people too. I know that.
Oh yeah.
What's his name?
Howard Chaykin.
Howard Chaykin was a writer on it, and
yeah.
You know, it definitely, you know, it was one of those first sort of. Like, I can't believe how much it sort of embraced the comic book world and, you know, how cartoony it looked. And
yeah.
And the special effects, I mean, again, you know, they're expensive, but, you know, worth it, you know, because, like, some of the effects that are in that are just as good as, you know, the modern stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the thing that struck me the most is, like, obviously the modern stuff kind of, like, looks like, for lack of a better term, flashier, mm-hmm. you know, like, but...
Hey, I see what you did there.
Yeah, see what I did there? Yeah, but I do have to say that like, I was really struck by, like, how little sort of advancement had been made in sort of the presentation.
Not much, right?
Yeah, I really feel like that the 1990s, like what? It's been almost 25 years? And they still are sort of doing the like super fast blur and you know the sort of like still camera like when he's running and they're trying to focus and everything is like blurred behind
right.
him. And
mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, the presentation, you know, I mean it looks slicker, but the presentation is still kind of the same, right?
That's why a lot of it. That X-Men scene was so good because of that.
Which X-Men scene?
He's talking about the Quicksilver scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you get a little bit of that, you know, in the new Flash TV series, you know, where
right.
things will slow down a little bit. But, like, you know, I've sort of read a little bit about the making of that Quicksilver scene and stuff like that. And it's like, wow, that's so cool. But you just can't get away with, like, that sort of production value and, like, spending that much effort on a weekly show with shots like that.
Well, yeah. And that explains the CG too, because a lot of that CG is super rushed. I mean, even just the set pieces, that was the one thing I just wish they amped up a tiny bit, just maybe I guess they just don't have the time, but like the Star Lab shots were very like, I thought kind of hunked in, like plopped in there.
Are you talking about the new one?
Yeah,
or
on the new
one.
Yeah. But
oh,
maybe,
really?
Maybe because I'm watching on a standard def TV.
Oh, really? Holy cow. Wow.
Yeah, that could be why. They might look cleaner and crisper on an HD television.
Do you know that one of the producers of this show was a writer, it looks like, on The Rocketeer? He wrote the story for The Rocketeer.
On which one? On the 1990 one?
The 1990 one, yeah.
What's his name?
Danny Bilson.
Huh.
Yeah,
really
I did
cool.
not know. I did not know that. Paul DeMeo and Danny Wilson were like the two big producers behind it. Oh, yeah, they both worked on The Rocketeer.
Very awesome.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
It's like this show, like if it would have caught on and like would have been huge, like it really would have changed sort of the way superheroes, you know, are perceived and like. Yeah, it's really interesting that like this show really now, like hardly anyone knows about it. And
I know
it is a shame. One of the best things I loved about the new show is the fact that they cast the John Wesley Shipp, who was the previous Flash, as the new Flash's father.
Yeah.
Which made, you know, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen the pilot episode, but, you know, his dad's been accused of killing his mom, and he's been in jail, and the scenes that are in the jail are just absolutely touching, not just because of the acting, but also because of the, like, sort of the Flash legacy that's going on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, what's interesting about that is The biggest tragedy of The Flash, you know, the original, the 1990 show, was part of the reason that it apparently, or what some of the blame that's given for the series tanking is that, you know, the rumor got out that the lead actor, John Wesley Shipp, was gay.
Oh, no.
And, like, of course, this is 1990, you know, and apparently, like, you know, whatever, people got freaked out by that and they stopped tuning in. You know, and that was part of the reason for its cancellation. I guess from what I read, is that it kind of like hurt his career a bit, which sucks completely, because that's just like, that's ridiculous that that should have anything to do with it, you know?
Yeah.
He's a lovable guy. I always thought that, like, he was the coolest guy on The Flash.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a, first of all, yeah, let's just talk about him. I mean, he's just as good in his own way as the new guy is. You know yeah. what I mean? It's funny because it's like he very much sort of exemplifies that sort of like late 80s, early 90s sort of action hero that's very muscular and very, you know, like ripped and stuff. I mean, that was the one problem I kind of had with the 1990s Flash, was I always felt that he looked a little too bulky to be like right. the Flash, you know, right. but that was sort of the way they were casting heroes, right? But
right.
the thing that always struck me about John Wesley Shipp was that he didn't come across as a dumbass, like, you know, like right. a lot of those ripped, you know, really like no. whatever Stallone, Schwarzenegger guys did back then, you know?
Yeah. Actually, it's interesting. I was reading that the pilot was not written for him. It was written
really?
For a dude named Richard Burgee, who huh. was in a really fantastic superhero-ish show called The Sentinel. Back in the day. He's a really interesting dude too. You know, he's again another big guy, you know, who comes across as a very intelligent, you know, smart guy. And Burgee actually appears as in the show as an older hero who's sort of modeled after, I think, the Prowler.
Oh, I remember that.
Called Nightshade. Because I watched a couple of the episodes that were available on the net. I wasn't able to get the whole show, but
that guy Burgee was like on Silk Stockings or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. There was like a whole like sort of group of guys there who were able to do, you know, sort of the big, you know, heroic thing, but also have, you know, a brain going on behind it.
Yeah, I think the trend wasn't, at least in film, wasn't going that way, though. At least I just remember guys like Jean-Claude Van Damme and who's the dude, Steven Seagal and stuff like that.
Steven Seagal.
That most of the action heroes from that era were really, they just came across as like dead wood in the brain to me.
Yeah.
Well, also they weren't really sensitive. I took notes here. Barry apologizes to women at least four times in that show. He apologizes for stuff that he doesn't really, by today's standards, have to apologize for. But I think he apologized to Iris at least twice, and he apologized, I think, to the scientist lady twice.
Yeah,
And for no reason at all, just because he's a nice guy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's sort of the quality that Shipp kind of, like, exemplified, right? I mean, he did, as whatever sort of, like, soap opera actor as he looked, he really exemplified that sort of, like, everyday guy, like, that mm-hmm. you wouldn't be threatened by, you know, and didn't have a chip on his shoulder, right?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he just, again, like, the nice guy who does the right thing is, like, you know, that's exactly sort of who the Flash is.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, and he did. He totally exemplified that. Which is why it's so great to see him as, you know, the Flash's dad in the new show.
It really is. I mean, it was a really good touch from the opening scene in the new pilot where mm-hmm. they sort of described, you know, the tragedy that occurs like with Barry Allen's mom, and like he runs in the room, and it's like from the moment that he runs in the room, and they did a really good job of it not being like, hey, this is the old Flash, you know what I mean? Like I felt like they, you know, obviously he didn't get like tons of screen time in that opening sequence, but he does show up right away, you know, and I feel like that was very interesting that like he came in and it, he wasn't a distraction, you know what I mean? Like he blended into the thing. And I was very impressed with that. And you know, and then later on in that particular episode when he, you know, is talking to him like in jail, like you said, it was very human and touching scene. And that's something that I feel like a lot of sort of superhero shows kind of gloss over is that human connection, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what it, the only weakness that I really felt that I sort of feel, and they really need to be careful with this, is Iris, you know, especially with what's going on in the second episode, which, Ian, I don't know if you caught the second episode.
No, I didn't. I just got through the regular homework. It's on my DVR. Is Iris homework. Played by the young black girl?
Yeah, yeah, that's Iris, the girlfriend. And
yeah,
they're sort of delving into this whole thing of where she's like curious about the red blur, and maybe I'm gonna investigate, and I'm like, ooh,
turning her into Lois.
Yeah, turning her into Lois, and basing her existence solely on the fact that she is curious about the Flash. You know what I mean? And I think that's very dangerous water to tread in as far as like a lead female character is concerned. You know.
Mm. Well, we'll see. Because I mean, the other thing too is that they've got a romantic triangle. So,
that know, too.
With the partner. Although, you know, there's a. Well, I mean, you know, at this point, we all know that you know that Barry's arch enemy, you know, is in the show.
Yeah,
I mean, he's there. He's there from the pilot. You know. And it just sort of is going to be a matter of how he shows up and everything, you know. So
I need, I need help. I need help with that part. Is the arch enemy the
Professor
guy that
Zoom?
Professor Zoom, aka the Reverse.
The Reverse Flash.
He is the Reverse Flash.
Well, yeah. I don't know. So okay, so wait, backtrack a little because at this point,
I have questions here.
In the new pilot.
Yeah,
it opens up with Barry's mom being killed by a yellow blur of like energy. You don't know what it is. Of course, we all know what it is. Flash fans know what it is. And then
yellow blur.
Yeah. In the course of the accident that causes the Flash's, you know, gives the Flash, the new Flash, his powers, he hooks up with Tom Cavanaugh, otherwise known as Ed. From the NBC show for Ed.
But not Ed.
His name is Harrison Wells, and he's a scientist who also helps the Flash sort of get started. So basically what I think that they're telegraphing is that Tom Cavanaugh is the Reverse Flash.
Oh, shit.
But that was the thing that I kind of got concerned by because I was like, are they jumping into this like already? Like, are they like playing their cards like right up front? You know,
I don't know.
And what's interesting is that in the comics, you know, Iris's boyfriend, Eddie, right? Eddie Thane. No, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong guy. Yeah, is that his name, Eddie? Who's the boyfriend? The cop.
The cop.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know, because honestly, Iris and that guy, to me, were the weakest parts of the show.
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
But I have a feeling that they were setting him up to be another villain.
Here's the thing, though. Eddie Thawne, who is the character, the boyfriend's name on the show, is Professor Zoom's secret identity.
That's what I was trying to figure out. Yeah. So they're setting him up to be the Reverse Flash?
I don't know, because that in the comics, Eddie Thawne is Professor Zoom.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I was trying to stumble my way through.
Yeah.
You know? But it seems like Tom Cavanaugh is the Reverse Flash, the way that they're playing it, right?
But I don't know. It's like, you know, the way Tom Cavanaugh is, again, another great casting choice by them because he's very likable and but he's also got like this ability to do creepy very well. And you know, a couple of episodes in, I still don't know whether he's, you know, really on Barry's side or whether he's just gonna mess with him, you know?
Yeah. Right. And honestly, he looks a lot like an older version of Grant Gustin.
Mm. You know,
I feel like I'm
is it
wondering
the same guy?
Is it the same guy? Is he older or is it an alternate universe version of him? Oh, I mean,
my goodness.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I mean, in the first episode, at the end of the first episode, I mean, they're already throwing in, you know, references to, you know, Crisis that
I know.
The Flash disappeared. I mean, you're throwing Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, references in the first episode.
I know.
That's exciting.
I know. That's part of what I love about it. I mean, in the second episode, not to spoil anything for Ian, but they practically almost introduced the cosmic treadmill.
Yeah. Wait,
what about Gorilla Grodd?
And Grodd.
Yeah. In the beginning. I mean, come on. The cage that's open.
Yeah.
Ooh, I can't wait to see how they handle that.
I mean, that's the thing that makes me so enthusiastic about the show, and that what we've kind of said before is like that it's really embracing all the crazy stuff that's in The Flash. They're not fully showing it yet, but you get the feeling that, unlike Arrow, which, you know, that was part of what bummed me out about that show, is that they refused to call him Green Arrow. And at one point in the first season, somebody does call him the Green Arrow, and he's just like, what nonsense, you know?
Yeah.
I feel that Arrow definitely, like, sort of steered its course, where it was like, why are we running away from all this crazy superhero comic book stuff? And
right.
That's the thing about The Flash that I feel is, like, really great, is, like, they're just going at it from the beginning. You know, they're not afraid of it. And it seems like they have the budget to back it up, right?
Yeah, so far.
Yeah. So, I mean, that seems to be the weakness of the 1990 Flash, or the weakness of any sort of like 80s TV show, is that they never, like the Hulk or, you know, Wonder Woman, they never really faced off against like super villains, right?
Mm-hmm. And well, yeah, the closest that the Flash got in the 1990s was
the
when
trickster.
Mark Hamill was the Trickster.
Yeah.
Who's sort of a proto-Joker in this, you know, in the way that he did it.
The Hulk did have to face off with a half-retarded guy.
What?
Yeah, there was an episode where this guy Ricky was being held down in The Incredible Hulk by his, they had a car racing family, and this kid just wanted to, like, he was like a simpleton. And the Hulk, like, somehow Bruce Banner would turn into the Hulk, and he sort of made friends with this guy, Ricky. But anyway, yeah. I have no idea
what you're talking about.
I've watched every single episode.
I know you have, but I have
read,
no
read
idea. I
read several books on it. But yeah, he fought the Demi-Hulk, you know. He did, yeah.
There was Hulk versus Thor, although he was.
Oh, God. The less said about that, Thor. The better.
But the Hulk was more grounded in that kind of way, but they don't have to do that anymore. They can go, you know, full out here. I mean,
yeah, yeah. Well, even just the second episode with the multiplex, they introduced multiplex, and you're just like, I thought the effects in that were really kind of stunning.
Yeah,
for a TV show, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I just
they did a nice mixture of like CGI and also just dressing a bunch of people that looked alike together.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, they're really smart about their effects right now, I think.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think they're doing a really solid job. Ian, what were some of the notes that you took during the, took notes of the night. Well, let's talk about like the same things that, cause I mean, like in the 1990s episode and this one, they both have Star Labs, right?
Yes, yes.
And Star stands for what?
Star, God, I don't even know.
Is it I was like strategic technology.
Homeland, no, that's...
That's S.H.I.E.L.D. Star Labs, Scientific and Technological Advanced Research Labs.
Okay.
There you go.
There we go.
But I really, yeah, it's really funny how much the 1990s one has had such an influence on the current one. Because now you've got, it's funny because I really like the two science nerds in the current one. Like they don't seem to be, I don't think that they're like gratingly annoying or anything.
I like the girl a bit better than the dude.
Well, the dude is Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, but with super smarts.
Yeah, but I have to say that I actually like those two more than, just as much than the nerds on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, well,
that's okay.
Yeah, you don't have to be. I mean, but I think they've done like a really good job in both. I mean, both of them, right? The 1990s one, he used the and the current one, he has to wear the suit to keep from his clothes or whatever getting torn up, you know, from the super speed. Mm-hmm. I mean, both of them introduced scientists from Star Labs.
Yeah, in the original one, the suit was a diving suit, wasn't it?
Right, like a Russian diving suit.
Yeah, that's right.
And in the new one, it's a prototype for firefighting suit.
That's right, that's right.
I thought that was a good update, you know?
Yeah, Yeah.
The firefight. Now, what do you guys think of KRS-One in the 1990s version as the lab assistant?
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Yeah.
That guy... I don't think that was KRS-One.
Yeah, yeah, but
the lab assistant was a. I actually liked him a lot.
He was kind of mellow. Yeah, yeah. He worked all the time. Alex Desert, I think. I don't know how you pronounce, but he was on apparently Becker,
and had that's right,
which is a show that I never watched. But I looked up his credits like when I was first watching the pilot because I was like, that guy, he works in everything, and he does. He's got a huge list of credits, you know. So I mean, he's obviously doing something right.
It was amazing though in the 1990s one where he pretty much was like, hey, I'm Barry, I'm going to bed, see ya. And just as he's leaving, Barry gets nailed by the lightning and he comes running back up. I was like, wow, I think Barry is lucky. Like
you know, that nobody else was in that room. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just think that it's really funny because they've definitely built their own thing, but they've definitely pulled from the past in more ways than one, like in respectable ways, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they've just... You know, it's really funny when you watch them back to back, how much how much they sort of like are, you know, leeching off that original pilot, you know?
Yeah, total. I mean, and I just respect how ambitious that pilot was. I think that the new one's pretty ambitious, you know, but like looking back and thinking, wow, this is like, you know, in the early 90s, you know, I mean, it's like, holy crap, that was just an ambitious television show at the time. And I think it just sort of got overlooked and not taken seriously the way that superhero things usually did at the time.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Ian.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, just the biker hideout set alone was like huge. And it's like they were grilling in there. The bikers had a grill. And I was like, man, the set is huge.
Yeah.
Like, it is just huge. I was just kind of amazed at some of the stuff they did in there because the bikers were so crazy that they put their own guy on a bike and destroyed him in their own hideout with their own bombs. Like, that was nuts.
Yeah, yeah. That was a really good, like, there was some really good stuff in there with what's that series of, like, B sci-fi movies, Tracers or whatever?
Oh, yeah, Tim Thomerson.
Yeah, the guy that played the brother. Yeah, I mean, there was some really good stuff in there. Like, I felt like they did a really good job sort of, like, setting up the brother bond, you know, setting up the family dynamic of, like, the disappointed father, setting up the whole thing of, like... Hey,
who is that actor?
Did you notice that they named the brother Jay after
Jay Garrick? Yeah. It's funny. The little touches like that. It's just, it really is kind of so sad that show never really took off. You know, I mean, that it just didn't find an audience, and which is really weird because those Batman movies were hugely popular.
Yeah. But I think at the time, I think people were willing to accept that in a way because it was Tim Burton, you know, and they weren't necessarily ready for that in their everyday living room kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, as a movie with big movie spectacle, yes, but due to, you know, for whatever reason, you know, they just didn't expect to see it on TV. And the other thing, too, you got to keep in mind, TVs. We're on the old aspect ratio.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't widescreen like they are now. You know, they weren't like HD. You know, to most people had, what, maybe a 27-inch television or something like that. It did not look as good then as it does now.
Yeah.
On your DVD.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, and that's the thing that stuck out to me the most on the 1990s one, especially starting the second episode. Well, first of all, like, the ambition of that show too, it's really funny because the second episode kind of almost has like, the episode is about homeless people, like sort of being experimented on, but it has like a subtext of like, you know, these are poor people and nobody cares about them and they're on the street. And it was really funny because it takes place in, you know, the police station that Barry works in. And there were a couple of scenes where I was like, are they like reaching toward like sort of like a Hill Street Blues, like sort of feel with that? Like, I think it was even not just ambitious in the scope of like the effects and the sets and everything, but I think it was also ambitious in the scope of like what they might have been trying to do with each episode. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that second episode, but you know, I only got like 20 minutes into it. And so, you know, having a kid, you get distracted and something pulled me away from it. But watching it, I was just really stunned by like how differently TV was made back then.
Yeah.
And, but then also thinking like remembering the other types of shows that were on that, you know, at least the second episode, it's like they're kind of trying to do something different here, which you didn't really see on network TV at the time. At least that's what I thought.
Yeah. And it was a CBS show too.
Yeah.
You know, so like there was nothing else anywhere close to looking like it on CBS.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I noticed too, I got as far as you did, too, Christian, with the pilot and the second episode.
Yeah.
But reading over the synopsis and everything like that, it's clear that as they sort of went along, that they started to embrace the comic bookiness of it more.
Sure.
It started off very, you know, for the time, grounded and realistic, and then, you know, sort of became a little more loose and free. You know, they introduced, you know, the trickster. I guess there was a guy, they referred to someone as Gorilla Grodd, but it was a person. It was
a
gorilla. You know, but that they did start to like work in more comic references and things like that as the show went along.
Sure.
And if it had been picked up for a second season, you know, who knows what they could have done. It just wasn't meant to be.
Well, the rumor that was on Wikipedia, basically saying that that if they had done the second season, they were going to start introducing like his rogues gallery, you know, and that basically you would have had like Captain Cold, Captain Boomerang, you know, all that other stuff, you know, the Weather Wizard and stuff. And well, what did you guys think about what they did with the Weather Wizard in the first one? Because I thought that was some pretty impressive stuff. Yeah.
That was good. That was good.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was really well made. I mean, they established their, you know, premise really well with that. And, you know, it's good enough, you know, like, okay, you've got your premise that sort of sets off the whole, you know, you've got your heroes and your supervillains and everything without it being too Smallville-y. You know, of like, oh, you know, every week we're going to go after somebody who was infected by the meteorite, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's great because it seems to, what's awesome about Flash's Rogues Gallery, and I guess any sort of like villains gallery kind of thing, is that, you know, their power sort of gives you an insight as to who they are, you know? It's an aspect of who they are. And, you know, and I thought that was sort of the perfect jumping off point for Flash's Rogues Gallery.
Yeah. Well, I love the bit about he's like the tornado starts forming and he's like, I'll run in reverse. And I was like, holy cow. Like, they're actually going to try and do it. Like, I was like, that's great. Like, they don't even like blink twice. They're just like, but I really do feel that you could run into the danger. Again, that's one of the pitfalls that show could fall into like really easily is, you know, the villain of the week, sort of, which is what ended up being like Smallville's, like, mm-hmm. you know, big downfall. But I feel like that the crew on the Flash, you know, being sort of the same stuff that Arrow is made of, you know, because the problem with Smallville was that you had the illusion of change, but unlike, say, Buffy or Angel, nothing ever really changed. It was always sort of like the reset button, you know, right. It would, everything by the end of the episode would sort of get reset. And that is something that the Flash could fall into. Like the two things that I'm wary of are villain of the week and the Iris thing, where he's like, I really love Iris, but she doesn't know. Wee wee, you know, cute sappy music. You know, that is like the thing that could literally kill that show for me if it becomes like pining over Iris for too long. You know.
Yep. But, yeah. You know, it seems like they're willing to sort of move it along. And, you know, I mean, again, two episodes in and already, you know, you've got some pretty big stuff going
yeah.
on.
Yeah. So, I mean, or hints of it.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like they're willing to sort of move things along. And I've noticed the same thing on Arrow in the last season and a half. They're not afraid now to sort of shake it up
and
actually move things forward with the characters. And so, yeah, it seems like hopefully they've learned their lesson from Smallville. And it just looks like Gotham didn't.
Oh, God. Let's not even get started on Gotham. But did you guys see the leaked... Or not leaked. I think he tweeted them. The lead guy tweeted pictures of him or maybe his stunt guy and another guy dressed in the Reverse Flash costume.
I saw they had sets. There were set photos.
Yeah.
Of somebody in the Reverse Flash costume. I couldn't tell whether it was a stunt performer or the actual actor or anything. But what was cool is if you look on the Reverse Flash's hand, there's a ring.
Oh, that's what I heard. That's
it's like,
right.
Oh man, it's a ring to hold the costume.
It's so awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, but that's part of also my fear too. Is like, are they like blowing their load too fast? Like, slow down a little, guys. Like, you know what
it's
I mean?
The Flash, he can't slow down.
I know. It's just crazy. Like I guess the reason that I'm sort of finding myself. I said to my wife, Amy, while we were watching it, like, I really like this show, you know, and it reminds me of the feeling that I got a little bit like when I started watching the new Doctor Who's, where it was like the guy was enthusiastic and they were doing crazy stuff and they didn't care. Like, there's something inside me that really loves that sort of stuff. And I get really bummed out when people are like, oh, it's not realistic enough. It's not, you know, it's not dark mm-hmm. enough. And I'm like, oh, screw that. I'm tired of that. You know, I want like some really fun, like superheroic craziness. And hopefully the Flash is set to give us that, you know?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Episode. He runs against a tornado.
Yeah. I know. It's so great. And I just love, like, you know, they're apparently going to cross over with Arrow too mm-hmm. at some point this season. So I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, again, like, just, you know, to give him his props, Jesse L. Martin, like, I think that guy is kind of like the soul that's holding the show together in the first two episodes. Like, mm-hmm. I love that he's got that sort of father figure that, you know, is very concerned about him. And, like, it adds a little depth to, you know, as opposed to, like, these are just the parents and they're not really, you know, that, you know, deeply involved, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Oh, and Amanda Pays is apparently going to show up.
Oh, nice little another homage to the 90s show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like, according to the Internet Movie Database, that her character is going to have the same name as she had on the original show.
Huh.
Oh.
Weird.
Pretty weird. Universe is colliding. Stop it. No. So any other, like, last thought? Do you have any notes on the 90s pilot left over, Ian? Or
Yeah, Pike had real anger issues.
Pike?
Yeah, Pike, the bad guy. It was really strange because that one guy they sent down the tunnel with the bombs, like his girlfriend, this girl's eating in his room. She wants to get ahead in the gang, and I'm thinking, she goes to the leader, Pike. Pike is just playing with this, like, sick knife.
Yeah.
And he was like, he was happy she came to him, but it was like, this guy is definitely got some freaking issues. Let's see, what else do I have here?
Well, he was a soap opera actor, too.
Oh, okay.
I think Pike was like, oh, he was on Dynasty, I think, which was really funny because I remember I used to watch Dynasty when I was a kid. Look, there wasn't a lot on. And he was on Dynasty. And basically, when he showed up on that, it kind of ruined sort of the gravitas of the show for me. And so I was like, oh, that's the guy from Dynasty. I specifically remember having that feeling. But watching it this time, I didn't care because it's been so long.
Yeah, I mean, there was a really strange yell when Barry's brother died in the first one. He made this really weird yap.
Barry?
Yeah, yeah. He was like, ah!
Well,
I know his brother just died, but it didn't. It was just really odd. The other, Barry kept running into stuff. We know that. Running into the ocean was funny. Like they put him under the lifeguard stand.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, these people pull him out of the water. And
oh,
then,
that's right.
Leave him under a lifeguard stand.
That's right. They just left him there, and then he had to call his girlfriend to come help him.
Isn't that what you do?
She was like, she was like, F you, you know.
I thought the green exploding balls were an interesting choice.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the grenades.
They needed something bright, right? Because the set was so dark. I mean, I didn't know what to make of those. Let's see. Star Labs, I guess, is an old movie studio in the 1990s. It's like very just deco. It reminded me of like movie studio.
That was just sort of the set design of the time, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And yeah. I guess there's a few more. So I love when she's testing him on this treadmill, and I love the computer graphics of the 1990s.
Oh, yeah,
one,
yeah,
where
yeah.
they just show him kind of – he's just marching, and he totally blows this treadmill, but he managed to, like, totally stop himself without, like, anything flying or him going through a window, and it was very casual. Like, he's like, oh, I guess I broke your machine.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, yeah. The other thing I had was Scott and Tyrone. Yeah, that scene where he invades the bad guy's hideout and keeps
raising
the radio.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that was Scott and Tyrone. Like that. Like Tyrone was the white guy in that case.
Uh-huh.
I just thought that was interesting. And then Chief Roop, like the chief, was hysterical. Like when he's watching the news and like Barry knocks at his door to like tell him he's found the hideout. He's like, come back later, Julio. You could vacuum some other time.
Oh, jeez.
Like, they needed to somehow clarify that. I don't know. That was just weird. But and then when he was at the jail, he's like, this is Chief Rope. And I just thought that the actor was really hamming it up.
There was a degree of that even into the second episode. I mean, the style of acting has changed quite a bit.
Yes. Oh, okay.
And like you definitely have like a lot of those look, there's soap opera actors who are like really solid, you know what I mean? And then there's like sort of hammy soap opera actors and, you know, sort of those hammy character actors and things like that who you saw in like tons of TV shows. And they didn't always do such a good job of reining them in. Overall, at least with the principals, it was really well acted.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And the last thing was this, and this is a question for you guys. Like, so the Flash electrocutes this guy. I mean, granted, the guy killed his brother, but Flash totally electrocutes this guy at the end of the 1990s episode. Yeah. So do you guys know of any point in time? I mean, has Flash killed people a lot in the comics?
Well, no, I think that that was probably, you know, that was like a TV thing, right? Like that, yeah. That was very much like a, but the, it's funny that you mentioned the Flash killing somebody, because in the, right before the reboot and right before Crisis of Infinite Earths, there is a storyline, which is probably the, one of the few times that I was really heavy into the Flash, where mm-hmm. the Flash like accidentally kills the Reverse Flash.
Yeah.
Because the Reverse Flash is on his way to kill his fiance, the Flash's wow. fiance, on their wedding day.
Yeah.
So like the Flash and them are like racing across the planet, and like the Flash, like the Reverse Flash is like, you know, got his like hand out, like in sort of like a karate chop thing, and he's gonna like take her out by like knocking her neck out at like supersonic speed, you know, and the Flash grabs Reverse Flash from behind and yanks on his neck wow. and basically like yanks on his neck by accident, and turns out that he killed him. And it was really, at least for a kid of my age at the time, you figure I was probably, I don't know, 13, something yeah. like that. Like that was a really big deal, because superheroes at that time, they didn't kill. Right?
And it was a big
right.
it was a big deal at the time too.
Yeah.
He was really eaten up about that for a long time.
Yeah, and
I mean,
like,
even though this is the dude who's made his life hell for,
yeah, exactly.
You know, years.
Right.
But I mean, and there was even like, I specifically remember an issue of the Justice League where they like voted him out of the Justice League. And I remember being a little kid, because like the cover is like thumbs up, thumbs down. Will he stay in the Justice League? And they actually vote him out. And I just specifically remember being a little kid, being, you know, not a little kid, but a young guy, reading that comic and just being like, oh, they kicked him out of the Justice League. Like, just thinking like the whole thing was like a horrible mess, you know? And then along comes Crisis of Infinite Earths, and the Flash ends up making the ultimate sacrifice to defeat the Anti-Monitor, right? So,
hey, wait a minute. This is turning into the Green Lantern thing.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, there's definitely a history where the Flash has had to kill, as far as, like, the whole history of the modern character. You know, I got to say, like, I've never been, like, a big Flash fan, you know? Mm. That is a character that I have to go back and read up on. But it's just really interesting that you mentioned, like, him killing somebody in that pilot.
Yeah.
And how much... thing. That murder or like manslaughter sort of storyline is such an essential part of the Flash's history. That's interesting. That's cool. So any last thoughts on either one of these shows or?
No, other than like, I really want to track down the whole show now for the old one. And I want to keep watching the new one because it's really cool.
Yeah, I'm super excited about The Flash, and I don't know why, because I'm usually the cynic of the group, so I, you know, I'm usually like, this isn't so great, but for some reason, there's something about it that I like. What about you, Ian?
I think it's great. I actually, where can we get the old 1990s series? How can people get that?
Oh, well, they can watch the pilot on Amazon, right?
Okay.
If you have Amazon Prime, it's free. And then I don't know if it's free for just anyone on Amazon.
Right.
I don't know how that works, but I have Amazon Prime. And then the series is available for sale on Amazon as well. I think the price is a little bit up there, but
okay.
I found mine at Best Buy. Let me look up BestBuy.com.
$10,
you got,
right?
You yeah. got yours for $10?
$10
yeah.
at Best Buy.
I did not.
Wow.
I did not find them at the Best Buys near me.
Oh, really?
So supply maybe, you know.
Are there extra?
Iffy.
Are there extras but, on the DVD?
I haven't been through the whole discs, but I know that
I thought it was like, seriously, I thought they only made 8 or 10 episodes. Like, I lost track. I was kind of, I guess I was just too young and my dad wasn't into it, but man, that many episodes.
They may have only aired that many, but there were 22
yeah.
in the season.
Yeah.
I got that.
Yeah, and I just got, look, Flash CV, yeah, on BestBuy.com, the whole series is $9.99.
All right.
Wow.
And you may have, it says store pickup, you know, see when you can get it. Yeah, check stores. So give me a zip code, somebody. And I can let you know right now.
Oh, that's
quick,
great.
If you're out there listening, call in.
Yeah, I
let
know,
Christian
right?
know with your zip yeah. code right now.
I think that but honestly, I enjoy watching both pilots. I was like, you know, if this 1990s Flash was on, I'd probably be watching it. And
well, you go. You can pull a Hulk since you've watched every episode of the Hulk.
I am. I feel like I might pull a Hulk here. And,
yeah, but, I know I'm going to.
Yeah, the new show is great. It's a great addition. I think hopefully because I know CW is, I think Fox related. Hopefully Gotham will throw some of its budget to future Flash episodes.
I don't think they're interrelated at all, but
no.
Gotham needs to go the way of the Reverse Flash in the originals
yeah.
series. I think Gotham's done, but as far as I'm concerned, the Flash and Arrow are kind of like sort of my two big superhero fixes on TV right now.
Yay!
Yeah, awesome. Cool. All right, well, thank you for listening to our Flash versus Flash episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn. I'm on the line with Ian Scheller and Paul Edwards, and hopefully we will be here next week with another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Woo!